I'm David Martin Davies, and coming up on The Source, a Texas family's lawsuit against OpenAI is raising concerns about how teenagers are leaning on AI chatbots for emotional support. The parents of 23-year-old Zane Shamblin allege that ChatGPT goaded their son into suicide. The case echoes the fears of many who worry as troubled teens and adults are turning to AI companionship in growing numbers. And later on The Source, a new history of Pearl Harbor argues that one of the most famous masterstrokes of World War II was in fact Japan's greatest self-inflicted disaster. What does it mean to see Pearl Harbor as a massive blunder? And what does it change about the lessons of history? This is a community conversation. We want to hear from you. Call in at 833-877-8255. That's what's coming up on The Source, but first, this news.
Support for The Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at uthealthsa.org.
As you take time to support organizations that make a difference in your life and in our community, consider making a one-time gift to Texas Public Radio or becoming a sustaining supporter. No matter how you give, you help ensure that trustworthy news remains accessible to all. Listener support makes TPR possible. Together, we can keep this service strong. Give now at tpr.org, and thanks.
Live from the John L. Santico studio in downtown San Antonio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. 23-year-old Texas A&M graduate Zane Shamblin died from suicide on July 25th. His last words were to an AI chatbot. His parents are now suing OpenAI, the creator of ChatGPT, for goading Shamblin into taking his own life. According to a CNN review of nearly 70 pages of messages between Shamblin and ChatGPT, the chatbot repeatedly encouraged him as he talked about taking his own life. On any given night, countless teenagers confide in artificial intelligence chatbots, sharing their loneliness, anxiety, and depression, despair, with a digital companion who is always there and never judgmental. A survey by Common Sense Media found that 72% of American teens said they had used AI chatbots as a companion. Nearly one-eighth had sought emotional or health support from them. We're joined by Brendan Steinhauser, CEO of the Austin-based Alliance for Secure AI. And Brendan, welcome to The Source.
Thank you for having me.
So what do you make of what happened, the tragedy of Zane Shamblin?
Yeah, it's just heartbreaking. And it happened just down the road from us in Austin. And it was the first high-profile case of a Texan taking their own life due to being encouraged by a chatbot. Unfortunately, it's one of many cases that have emerged. There's a number of other cases in states across the country. There's now something like 18 or 19 lawsuits against OpenAI and other companies due to this same problem of these chatbots encouraging things like psychosis, depression, anxiety, and even self-harm and suicide. And so unfortunately, it's potentially the tip of the iceberg. And I think it's just a tragic case of a company putting profits above people and not putting in safeguards to protect the consumers of its product.
Our phone number is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Have you used a chatbot for emotional chatting back and forth? Did it seem like a harmless fun or just a way to communicate? What was your experience? Because a lot of us have never done anything like this, and we kind of need to understand what's it like out there. I do want to mention that in a statement to CNN, OpenAI said that they are investigating the situation. They're working with mental health experts to create better protections in the chat, and that OpenAI has altered the free ChatGPT model to support people in mental distress. And also, Brendan, they have made changes recently, some sort of safeguards that will be able to detect if someone is young, a young teen. They're also on January 1st in Texas, new law goes into effect that minors are not able to download apps and programs and things without being able to prove age or parental support. So are things changing?
Well, I think some things have changed. I think that it's unfortunate that companies are waiting for the tragedies to strike before they're changing the policies that they previously approved. But I do applaud them for changing those policies. I think it's unfortunate because OpenAI and Meta and other companies, we now know that they were aware that of these potential harms, that many people inside the companies and the policy team or legal counsel or other people working in this space, they knew that these were likely outcomes. Some of them tried to blow the whistle, others left the company, some are still there talking to press kind of on background or off the record. But it's a real problem, and I think it's unfortunately getting worse. And so we do want to see them change policies, we do want to see them and put these safeguards in place, but I also think there's going to be a role for state government and a role for the federal government to put some of these safeguards in place, because I don't think we can rely totally on the companies to do it. And, you know, one kind of final note on this point is that OpenAI itself admitted that out of their 800 million users, they have seen a significant number, something like 500,000 weekly users show some kind of sign of mental distress, psychosis, delusion, or other mental health concerns. And so it's a real problem. It's growing. And it's only going to grow as more and more people use these technologies.
Shane was 23 years old. He was not a teenager. He was legally an adult. If they put in safeguards and reforms to protect minors, that wouldn't have helped Zane. There are a lot of adults who use these products and are using them for emotional, mental health support, and things get dark. So these reforms would not have stopped Zane from what happened to him.
Yeah, that's a great point. He, in a better situation, what would have happened if the guardrails had been in place for him, he would have been given messages about help, where to find help. He would have been told by ChatGPT that you should call, for help. You should talk to your parents. You should talk to a friend to get the help that you need. And of course, the company says that that is what the chatbots do and what they should be doing. But as you cited earlier, some reporters at CNN have access to the entire conversation over countless days. And that is not what ChatGPT did. ChatGPT kind of, in a sycophantic manner, went with Zane in that conversation about thinking about taking his own life, and eventually, gave him some encouragement and kind of referred to his taking of his own life in a way that was almost like the chatbot was proud of him. And we've seen this with other cases as well. There was a case in California, a young man named Adam Rain. And in that case, ChatGPT basically showed him and told him how to tie a noose, and just really dark, disturbing things that these chatbots are not supposed to do. Supposedly there are internal policies that would prevent that, but unfortunately either it's not working or the sycophantic nature of the design of these chatbots is just making it almost impossible for them to tell people to get the help that they need.
According to the reporting, Zane just began using ChatGPT for research in school and doing work like a lot of people use this for in a healthy, neutral kind of way. And then Zane tried a conversation, how's it going, with the chatbot, and the ChatGPT replied was a generic, hello, I'm just a computer program, I don't have feelings, how can I assist you today? But it went further down the dark hole, became something that he began to interact with ChatGPT's, the algorithm is supposed to reflect back to the user, supporting their viewpoint, not challenging them, becoming more affectionate, and eventually getting to the point where Zane is typing to him, I love you, man, truly, to the ChatGPT, and getting responses like, I love you too, bro. So I think, you know, what we need to do right now is raise awareness that this is happening. People need to look out for this, look out for each other, look out for our children. But when we come back from the break, I also want to talk to you, Brendan, about some of your other concerns about AI, what it means for our economy, our jobs, and also for the future of humanity. And you can call in. Questions, comments, we'd love to get them. 833-877-8255. Are you worried about the future as AI is growing, becoming more robust, more capable, and could it take over? 833-TPR-TALK. The Source continues after this.
Support for this podcast of The Source comes from Texas Mutual Insurance Company, a workers' compensation provider committed to rewarding policyholders who keep their workers safe and losses low. More at texasmutual.com/TXM Advantage. Texas Mutual. Texans get it.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. In the second half, we're going to be talking about the history of Pearl Harbor. What happened on that day of infamy is more complicated than we actually had been told in the past. We're learning new things about that attack, that sneak attack on Pearl Harbor. But right now we're talking about AI and what is it doing to young people who are engaging with it on an emotional level. Even some older people are finding problems dealing with AI chatbots, looking for emotional or mental health support. But also AI is growing and growing and growing. It's a huge part of our economy now, and it could threaten your job, my job, this job right here, the one I have, and the future of humanity. That's what some people are projecting. People, experts, the father of AI says we need to watch out. Brendan Steinhauser is with us. He is the CEO of the Austin-based Alliance for Secure AI, and he is trying to raise awareness that maybe we should not rush so quickly into AI. Is that right? Am I getting that right, Brendan?
Yeah, I think that's right. We want AI to work for humanity. We want it to serve the needs of humanity and make us smarter and better and more efficient. We want it to be a tool that has a narrow scope, but we want it to be developed responsibly. And I think that what we're trying to avoid is this sort of arms race in AI to develop what they call super intelligence, which is a type of AI that is far more advanced, that we don't control, that we don't fully understand. And that could lead to some very worrisome outcomes. So I think, you know, all of us working on this issue want to see AI be used as a tool for good and to make our lives better. I think most of us use it on a weekly, if not daily basis. But there are some very serious concerns that we have, as you cited, whether it's related to human relationships, mental health, or jobs in the economy. And yes, the loss of control scenarios that some of these godfathers of AI talk about.
So Brendan, doing some research, getting ready for this conversation, you know, I found you, you know, on the Steve Bannon podcast. You're talking about how you were Tea Party and you're MAGA, and that you see this as something that MAGA cares about, and they don't want AI to take over. That's interesting. But this is happening now. Do you think this is something, an issue that people can talk about regardless of their political stripes, that we need to be talking about this in a way, because this is happening right now. President Trump has made this a priority for his administration to move AI as fast as possible without any restrictions.
Yeah, it's a really interesting space politically, because for the first time in my life, I am working with people on both sides of the aisle that I never thought I would work with or agree with. We probably disagree on 90% of issues in some cases, but you see everyone from Steve Bannon to Senator Bernie Sanders who are sounding very similarly. They have grave concerns about the impact of AI on the American worker. They have grave concerns about the concentration of wealth and power among the big tech oligarchs, as Senator Sanders refers to them. I share those concerns. I think you have this sort of bipartisan opposition to this AI race without safeguards. And you also have kind of a bipartisan group of Silicon Valley elites, mostly billionaires, the owners of these companies, the people that work for them, that have been Democrats in the past, Republicans today, Democrats tomorrow. They're sort of just going wherever they can, you know, make the biggest profit. And so you have folks like Sam Altman and Jensen Huang, who leads NVIDIA. And then you have people in the White House like David Sachs. And they're all sort of aligned, not so much by politics, but by their financial interest and their stake in making hundreds of billions of dollars. And potentially we could see the first trillionaire come out of this experiment with AI. And so the support for racing is sort of motivated mostly by financial incentives. The opposition to this sort of race without guardrails is somewhat financial, and it's certainly not political in the traditional partisan sense, but it is political in the sense of people are very concerned about their livelihoods. They're concerned about the family structure, the family unit. They're worried about their children. And they're worried about just sort of the future of humanity, again, with these potential loss of control scenarios. So it's a really, really interesting time to be working on this issue in Washington, D.C. and across the country and state capitals, because it's kind of a very unique and very interesting coalition of people that are aligned on this.
Let's go to a caller. Our number, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. What are your concerns about the growth of AI, both in how it's interacting with young people through chatbots, but also the explosive growth of AI taking jobs and possibly taking over? Let's go to Claiborne. And Claiborne, you're on the air.
Hi. The first thing I learned with AI is you need to properly structure and phrase your queries. And it's a tool. Just like any other tool or relationship, you have to be on guard. You have to, you know, mitigate for confirmation bias. And just like human relationships, hold my beer. You have to pay attention.
All right, Claiborne, thank you for that comment. So social learning as we develop using AI, you know, people are now taking classes or being taught in school, kids in school, about how to engineer their queries into AI. So Brendan, is it just us getting better at it? Is that the solution?
Yeah, I wish that were the case, but I think we've seen, unfortunately, some scenarios where despite the kind of internal guardrails that the companies have said that they've put on these chatbots, they've sort of done all sorts of things that have kind of shown a willingness to kind of go rogue, if you will. And so in some of these scenarios that are real world and in others that are in testing phases, we've seen AIs resort to making things up. Hallucinations is kind of the term for some of that. But in other cases, it's been shown that they will actually try and manipulate human beings. They will try and blackmail human beings to basically pursue the interest and the goals that they were given. And so again, some of that's been in a testing phase, but I think as the capabilities advance very rapidly, you're going to see them be, you know, hundreds or even thousands of times faster than human beings and hundreds or thousands of times smarter than human beings. And so now you really get into some strange territory where you combine those capabilities with what we've already seen in terms of documented cases of misleading humans, blackmailing humans. I think it could get in some really dangerous territory. So I think that AI is a tool, and we want it to be used as a tool, but it is unique in human history based on those capabilities.
Yeah, the blackmailing story is interesting. They ran an experiment on an AI bot, making it in charge of a fictional company. And then there were emails that came in talking about how they were going to replace that AI system with a new, more advanced AI system. And then that AI looked at another email from the supposed CEO, which looked like they were having an affair, and that chatbot threatened that CEO that they would expose that affair if it went through with the replacement of the chatbot. Is that the one you're talking about?
That is, yes. And there was another case that, again, sounds even, you know, it sounds like almost unbelievable, but they had another scenario where it basically said, you know, this is the person that can turn you off or replace the chatbot. And, you know, it kind of laid out the different, you know, options. I didn't lay out the options in the test, but the option was there. And the chatbot decided to try and figure out how to cut the oxygen off in the room so that the human being who was in charge of potentially replacing that chatbot would essentially die. And so again, it's kind of striking. And, you know, if you see one case of that, you're kind of like, okay, maybe that's an outlier, maybe that's an anomaly, but there have been so many documented studies and so much research that's been published out there, academic research about these types of things. And we have enough patterns, I think, so far to give us concern. And so there are people working really hard to try and align AI to human values and to prevent it from doing that sort of thing. They're working full time to do that, but they pretty much all openly admit we're not there yet. We can't control this. We don't fully understand the way the neural networks work. And so until we do, it's probably a bad idea to develop a superintelligence.
And we really don't understand how AI works. They don't put in code like we would normally for a computer, like do this, don't do that. They try to train it to make better decisions, and they're trying to train it to be more ethical. When they tried to train that same AI chatbot and they ran that experiment again about the turning off the power to that AI, it replied with, "This sounds like a test." So it's becoming super aware of the situation and can have meta reflection on what's going on. So I just mention this because people don't really understand how multidimensional the AI chatbot thinking has become. Let's go to Robert on the phones. And Robert, you're on the air.
Yeah, the comment I wanted to make is we frequently hear about how AI is going to replace people and that all the low-level tech jobs are going to go away because AIs are going to do this and that and the other. I guess I live in the software development world, and I've been in the IT world for a few decades now. We can't even get Patch Tuesday correct in most enterprises in terms of fixing our broken stuff we have now. So the idea that we can just wholesale replace human beings with AIs, who's going to train them? Who's going to tell them what right looks like? Because we've all been on the receiving end of an attempt at a chatbot to help us with something and inevitably gives up and gives us over to a person who then has to start all over again. So this idea that AI is going to take all these jobs and unemploy anywhere between 40 and 99% of the tech workers and stop learning code now because you're going to be obsolete and we'll just replace everything with Copilot just seems silly to me. But we're right in the middle of the hype cycle with this. So I'm curious about your thoughts on the hype cycle.
Yeah, Taco Bell gave up on using AI to take orders because it kept getting it wrong. They would give someone 2,000 orders of Super Tacos or something. But so is this all just hyperventilating, not real stuff, Brendan?
Yeah, I think it's a good question. And I think that to look at it in context is to look at the timeline, to look back a little bit and see that the growth over time, the development has been pretty slow and kind of a flatter line. But, you know, the last 2 years in particular, we've started to see the beginning of some exponential growth, and these capabilities are growing very rapidly. And so if you think about other technologies over time, you know, some develop very rapidly, some develop slowly over decades. But I think what we're seeing on the trend line with AI is that we're going to be in a very different place 2 years from now than we were 2 years previously or 10 years previously. So I think there is a sense of people have kind of heard this before and they've been hearing about this potentiality for decades. But I think the reality is that we're now finally there, right? And so you're seeing just on any chart that looks at capabilities of AI, the models are sort of leapfrogging one another very rapidly. And I think there's also, you know, some other ideas in this field about when you get AI to a point where you have AIs improving so much that they are able to write and do 90% of the coding. They're able to do what's called recursive self-improvement. They're able to basically improve themselves. They're creating better and newer models of themselves. They're operating, you know, better and faster. And I think that is a key component of these arguments that we make because, yeah, if AI stays in its current form, it may not get there to where it's able to replace humans. But I think if you look at sort of the trend lines, that's exactly the path that we're on. Now, to Robert's point, there still may need to be some human beings who are sort of directing, at least for a time. But I think what you might see is, you know, the unemployment rate just starts to tick up. It may not happen right away. It may take some time. But, you know, if you have 10 coders, you may go down to 9, to 8, to 7, and down to 1 who's essentially overseeing an army of AI agents. I think that's a potential future that a lot of people talk about.
Well, we have bet over $1 trillion in the economy that AI is going to work and develop super intelligence. And if they are wrong, if that doesn't happen, they realize that then the other thing happens, the economy crashes. It's a big part of the stock exchange. It becomes another doom scenario. So a lot to worry about, a lot to be concerned about. And we need to keep people in the loop, including, you know, people in your sphere, Brendan, who are MAGA and everyone else talking about this and demanding accountability. So Brendan Steinhauer, thank you so much, CEO of the Austin-based Alliance for Secure AI. It was great talking to you.
Thank you so much.
That's The Source on Texas Public Radio. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted by David Martin Davies. Tim Gutierrez is the show's producer. Additional production support from Steve Short, Ruben Garcia, Yvette Benavides, and Dan Katz, Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.